Misha here. If you enjoy our episodes on career pathways in healthcare or the STEM field at large, then I have the perfect podcast recommendation for you, Raising Health. Previously called Bio Eats World, Raising Health comes from leading venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz, the same team behind the acclaimed A16Z podcast. Each episode, Raising Health dives deep into the heart of healthcare, biotech, and AI with venture capital investors and A16Z general partners. Along the way, they explore the real challenges and opportunities in health and biotech entrepreneurship. So whether you're interested in building a new digital healthcare company or your company is advancing a new, novel medicine, Raising Health sheds light on some of the opportunities and obstacles along the founder's journey. Not to mention, you'll hear raw insights, actionable advice from notable guests like Omada CEO and co-founder Sean Duffy, and AI expert and in situ CEO Daphne Koller. Don't miss out. Follow Raising Health on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and tell them I sent you.
A science story, huh?
Is NYU scientist the...
I felt it. I was so happy. I figured it out. It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Lilly, and welcome to The Story Collider, where we bring you true personal stories about science. A quick note, we have live shows coming up November 26th in London, December 3rd in New York, and December 9th in Boston. StoryCollider.org for more details. This week's story is from Brian Fisher. The story was recorded in October 2014 at the Rickshaw Stop in San Francisco, California, as part of the Bay Area Science Festival.
I vomited the ninth and last pill. Any of those pills could have saved me. I had waited too long to realize I was suffering from a severe case of malaria. All this enthusiasm I had for the rainforest, to being in Africa for the first time, seeing the elephants, the gorillas, the chimps, the sititungas, had left. Now I felt alone. I had to do something, but with malaria, there's this fog that comes, keeps you from thinking. I knew I had to do something quick. My only hope was to get out, to get to the closest people, a tiny group of pygmies living about 10 kilometers away. I guess growing up in the cornfields of Illinois made me realize that all the adventure, all the real places were somewhere else. Maybe that's the fault of National Geographic. But I just knew I would spend the rest of my life finding those places. Early on, I realized that I would have to be outside. I would be a scientist, but I had no idea how I'd make a living. But I'd find a way to get to Africa. On the way to the village, I had thrown up so much I lost all my vocal cords and only could speak with the highest whisper. I'd tried to meet the pygmies before to buy meat, but it was hard to get into their society. And as I was approaching, I didn't know much about them. The pygmies are this group of short people. That's true. In fact, I fit right in. It was actually really nice to realize that I was, you know, of stature. These people always intrigued me, but as I approached, I didn't know what to say. And when I finally arrived, I just said I was thirsty. I was really thirsty, in fact. All day I'd been suffering and vomiting, and my organs were just slowly closing up. They gave me a glass of water, and immediately I began to vomit. The elder of the village grabbed me around the chest as I vomited, and I said I needed help. I said, I'm sick. He said, you're not sick. You're dying. He took me into this room and laid me on this bamboo bed and left. Across from me was a chimpanzee. I looked at the chimpanzee. He looked at me. We would later become friends, but at this point, I didn't know who he was. And I was laying there. I was getting sick. I was cold, then freezing, and then hot and sweaty. And the chimpanzee just looked at me. Later, he would come over and put his hands on my feet. And then he grabbed my sandals. I began to doubt what I was seeing. Was I in the chimpanzee bedroom? He picked up my shoes, and I watched him put the Velcro straps on his feet and started walking around the room with my sandals on. And I was laying there going in and out of sleep, getting sicker and sicker. I'd come to Africa to study ants. And everything I began to study actually wasn't working. You know, ants, to me, were the most important part of the forest. But for most of you, ants are maybe are invisible. You know, ants are like the glue that holds forest together. If we want forest, we need ants. If we want forest, we'll have to actually understand what's in there. This need to want to explore and find had brought me here, but I realized now that everything about becoming a scientist was failing. And here I was, sick and in bed. The next morning, I guess the elders realized that maybe I was dying slower than they had thought, and maybe I should get help. They placed me in a bamboo backpack of a woman, me facing out, and the woman just trotted off about 24 kilometers to the nearest town and dropped me off at a clinic. I remember this. I was given a wooden number 24, and placed on the grass along with all the mothers with their sick children. And I began to just kind of struggle to stay with it and say, I have to get help soon. I don't know if I could wait till number 24. And just when the cycle of vomiting bile became to happen again, I opened the door to the clinic and just vomited and out spewed, and I fell to the floor, and this huge African woman lifted up my head and placed it in a porcelain basin. And the African doctor ran over and said, "Tu vas claquer, you're going to die." That wasn't news to me. And he shot me with this liquid Fansidar, the miracle drug, and stuck an IV in me and placed me in his own bed. Immediately, with Fansidar, this fog begins to lift. And you begin to realize, oh my gosh, what am I doing? How didn't I realize what was happening? And the doctor gave me his bed until nightfall, and he said, "You have to leave," and sent me to the regular hospital beds, which is actually a very gruesome place, with lots of moaning, no food, no water. It's because there, your families take care of you, and I had no family. The next morning, early, I just decided to leave. Though with all the pain of all the organs still hurting, I was like a 90-year-old man just walking off in the bright sunlight. And reappeared, the pygmy woman with the basket. And I trotted off with her in her backpack back to the village. And for the next 6 weeks, I recovered in that village. And I began to get to know the pygmies. Recovering is a slow process because, as it turned out, it wasn't just malaria. I'd picked up also a few other diseases along the way. But being with the pygmies, I felt like I was actually, for the first time, really experiencing a forest. I remember one of the first hunting trips, and it was actually brutal to watch them shoot and kill a mandrill, the most beautiful primate in the area, and walk it back in a handshake across the forest floor. I began to think about our relationship with the forest. You know, as a scientist, I always wanted to make a change, to make a better world, to stop deforestation, to stop the loss of the coral reefs. That's what I wanted to do, and I wanted to use science for that. But here I was with a society who had almost no use for science, almost no use for technology, and there was nothing to fix. They had a relationship. They realized that as a human being, we are animals, and what we need is clean energy, clean food, and nature. In this busy life of San Francisco, we forget that. I forget that. As a student, I thought about conservation and protection. And the more I spent with the pygmies, I realized it was more about understanding our relationship with nature, not about its protection, not about its sustainability. As I began to stay with the people, my views about what I wanted to do as a scientist changed. Their understanding of the forest was far more than I could ever learn as being a scientist, far more than I could ever learn alone studying science. And I realized that science alone is not going to save the rainforest, reduce our destruction on the planet. In part, science is part of the problem. So we have to change how to be a scientist, in a sense. When I left Central Africa, it was with great sadness and difficulty to actually even get to the airport and say goodbye to these people. I got to the plane. I remember sitting and watching, looking out in the darkness, boarding the plane to Paris, thinking about when I would see the elephants or the chimps or the gorillas again. When would I actually get to see these people again? But as it turned out, I never did. In fact, all the forest where I had been no longer exists. These people, because of deforestation, have been pushed to the fringes. When I was on that boarding the plane, I listened. And I swear I heard the red-breasted cuckoo say, "Do come back." Thank you.
That was Brian Fisher. Brian is a modern-day explorer who's devoted his life to the study and conservation of ants and biodiversity around the world. By documenting the species diversity and distribution of this invisible majority, Dr. Fisher is helping to establish conservation priorities for Madagascar, identifying areas that should be set aside to protect the highest number of species. Along the way, he has discovered hundreds of new species of ants. He created the annual Ant Course in 2001, Ant Web in 2002, and the Madagascar Biodiversity Center in 2004. He is currently curator of entomology at the California Academy of Sciences and adjunct professor of biology at both the University of California, Berkeley, and at San Francisco State University. For more science stories, take a look at storycollider.org, where we have archives of the podcast and upcoming events. Also, we depend on listeners like you for our support. If you love the podcast, please consider donating at storycollider.org/donate. The Story Collider is produced by me, Brian Wecht, Aaron Barker, and Ari Daniel. The podcast is produced by Rose Eveleth. Additional help from Brooke Williams, Lena Groger, and Justin D'Ambrosio. The theme music is by Ghost. Special thanks to the Rickshaw Stop for hosting the show, to the Barrier Science Festival and Kishore Hari for incredible help, and to my fifth grade science teacher for letting me use magazine cutouts for my bug collection. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.